Hello, hello, everyone. Which camera am I looking at? Am I looking at this one? Okay, here we go. Happy Monday, everybody. Unless you are a Broncos fan, a Cowboys fan, or a Chicago Bears fan, then it is not a happy Monday. It is a very, very, very sad Monday. I'm Ashley Nicole Moss. This is Brandon Marshall, and this is Paper Route. We have so much to get into for today's show, so we're just going to dive right into it. Brandon, before we start that, how was your weekend? Did you watch the games? This is me being nice.
I like that.
This is me being nice.
My weekend was smooth. Really easy. I didn't travel. I didn't have anything to do. So I just relaxed.
Okay.
It was awesome. How was your weekend?
It was good. I did the Revolt Conference this year again. I did it last year as well. This year I wasn't moderating. I was on a panel. Very cool. Jemele Hill.
Right.
Sha'Carri was on it as well.
Really?
Yes. Sha'Carri.
We cleared that up this week.
Yes. It was very cool. So I was in Atlanta. I came back. I was back in time to watch the Dallas Cowboys.
Give us the highlight. Somebody you met, a party you went to.
You know where I did go? The food was fantastic. Shout out to Cam Newton's Spot Fellowship.
Oh, you went to Fellowship?
It was fantastic. I'm not a cigar smoker, so I didn't do that. Food was incredible. The drinks were good. The food was good. The atmosphere was cool. I had a chance to try playing cards. So I missed him. He was there yesterday before.
Oh, he's
with him, Jalen Rose. They were there.
Really?
I was still in Miami, obviously, because I didn't fly out until Friday. But he was there.
I'm surprised because he's there like every night.
Really?
Playing cards.
Yeah, he wasn't there that night, but he was there the night before. Yeah. So, yeah, shout out to Fellowship. Thank you for the hospitality. The food was incredible. We're gonna dive right into some football talk. Okay, so Brandon, your former team, the Miami Dolphins, almost made history.
Former teams.
Well, one of your former teams.
Well, I played for the Dolphins and the Broncos.
That is true.
Yeah.
Here we go. So it was a battle of your former teams. I didn't even think about that when I teed that up. Okay, listen, the Dolphins, though, they almost, there you go, look. The Dolphins right behind us. Isn't that cool, y'all?
Yep.
They almost made history. So listen, in the most dominating performance the NFL has seen since 1966, the Miami Dolphins beat your Denver Broncos by 50 points. Yes, you heard that correctly. 5-0, 50, securing a 70-20 victory. Now, Miami showcased their athleticism and dominance as quickly as 2 minutes into the first quarter with a 54-yard touchdown to Tyreek Hill. And the wins and the score just kept rolling from there. It was absolutely incredible. Can I tell you guys, I was a little tired from, I woke up at 6 a.m. to leave Atlanta.
Yep.
So I got home around 10 a.m. I was up, I dozed off a little bit. I woke up in the fourth quarter and I did one of these,
I
thought I was seeing things. And then I look at my dad and he's like, yeah, it's real. And I said, wow, I've never seen that in my life.
It was obviously unbelievable.
Yeah. Listen, thoughts on that before we start dissecting this layer by layer.
So first off, I said this for over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Two things I've been leaning into. One, the Miami Dolphins are the best team in football is not close, right? You got to think about how they're all playing together. Offensively, they're top five in offense, right? I think they're one. Defensively, top five. Special teams, they're in the top 10. So they're playing lights out across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Their defensive coordinator is in his bag. Offensive coordinator, which is their head coach, Coach McDaniel, Mike McDaniel, is in his bag, right? When you're playing against a team that's like in perfect harmony, it's impossible. It's almost impossible to beat them. So that was one. And two is Tua Tagovailoa.
Mm-hmm.
Tua is the best quarterback in football, and people are looking at him like, damn, what about Patrick Mahomes? Don't forget about him. I'm not saying if there was a draft and I'm a general manager that I'm going to go with, Tua first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely going to draft Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be the face of my franchise.
Right.
But where it sits today, when you're talking about playing efficient football, making decisions quick, there's nobody playing the quarterback position better than Tua Tagovailoa. He's in a zone. He's in a space. Sometimes you see this for a game. Sometimes you might see this for a couple of games. And, hell, sometimes guys like this stay exactly where they're at for a season, and they become the MVP. So that's first and foremost. When I was watching this game, the first half, it was actually an interesting game because I was actually pointing out, like, the Denver Broncos are actually in perfect position. They're in perfect position because, you know, Russell was actually moving the ball in the Denver Broncos, but they weren't capitalizing. Right. And I was like, damn, they should actually feel, and I may have even tweeted this out, like, they should actually feel good about what they're seeing on the offensive side because they're moving the ball in the chains against Coach Vic Fangio, who's legendary. You know I love him. And then also this really good defense. Mm-hmm. But they weren't capitalizing. And that's the signs of a really good team. This is the last thing I would say. That's the sign of a really good team, right? Miami Dolphins, who I'm speaking of, is when you have a team that doesn't capitalize on their opportunities in a red zone or the Miami Dolphins mistakes and they blow you out. And that's what happened. Right. Like they got down to the red zone. There was a penalty. It was a touchdown that was called back. They got a hold. There was a couple things that happened where they didn't capitalize on it. In that first half, the score could have been different. Mm-hmm. It could have been tied up. Hell, the Broncos could even had the advantage, mm-hmm. but they didn't take advantage of it.
Well, listen, I mean, you spoke about Russell Wilson and the Broncos. We'll dive into that in a second. But I mean, have you ever been in a game? I just want to think about from a psychological standpoint, right? You've been in battles, tight games, blowout games. This was a different kind of blowout. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, when you are on the sidelines and you look up at the score and you see it's a 50-point deficit.
Right.
I mean, or even a 40-point deficit, a 30-point deficit, psychologically as a player, how do you even pull yourself out of it doesn't even matter at this point. Like, you're just pulling yourself out of just the embarrassment of just not showing up and not being able to stop the bleeding.
Listen, I know we're going to talk about this because there were some comments made after the game, but I think these are the moments, even what happened with Deion in Colorado, those are the moments where we look around and we say, okay, who the hell is in this foxhole with me?
Right.
So this is where you really see who your leaders are. This is really when you really see who your captains are, who you really know is like that, right?
Right.
Because the really good players, like, they take their game to a whole nother level because now when you sit there and watch film, what you're looking at is like, yo, I didn't quit. I continue to give effort when the game was over. And then you can look at the man next to you and be like, ah, but you loafing right here. You ain't do your job. Who are you, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot that you can learn about yourself and your team in these moments. So I was always one of those guys that actually played harder in these moments. I recall Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football playing against the Green Bay Packers, and it was like 50-10 or something. And I'm like, I'm still trying to score touchdowns. I'm still trying to stiff arm dudes to the ground.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you definitely got to go ahead and give props for the guys who were able to keep on fighting, but we can't ignore how emotional this was if you were on the Denver Broncos, if you were wearing an orange jersey. This was not something that was taken lightly. So while the Finns' dominant and nearly historical 70-point performance was a cause for celebration for Dolphins fans and football fans in general, for the Broncos, it was highly emotional. And Denver lineman Garrett Bowles shared some of those emotions post-game. Listen to this.
Right now, what are the emotions like going through your head personally?
Shit. Shit. It's tired of losing, man. I've been here for 7 years and all I've done is loss, and it's frustrating.
Oh, what
he
you
said,
mean?
I've been here for 7 years and all I've done is loss. That's sad.
Shit, I went 13 years in my career and that's all I did was lose. Like, you okay?
But with the same team?
It don't matter. Losing is losing. It all feels the same. It doesn't matter. And this is why when we talk the business of football, I always lean into, bro, get your money, put your team, put yourself and your family first, your kids first, because at the end of the day, like, this is part of it.
I know, but it's still really sad to hear.
No, it ain't sad. I mean, it does sucks in this moment, but we take this stuff too personal. That's what we do. Like, this dude probably he's probably gonna feel terrible for the next week or two until they get a win. You know, you just gotta understand that this is a job and it happens.
Well, we actually have a super chat about Russell Wilson, and I'll get to that in a second because he is the subject of this next point when dissecting this Dolphins-Broncos game. Now, Sean Payton oddly decided to keep quarterback Russell Wilson in the entire game despite the 50-point deficit. It was a decision that Dolphins cornerback Xavien Howard called totally disrespectful. He said, quote, "That man did a lot for this game. They've got to do better on that side. You can't be leaving guys out there like that." So, Brandon, I mean, the decision to keep Russell Wilson was in the game was definitely dissected by a lot of talking heads yesterday, today as well, former players. Is it a sign of disrespect when you are that far away from even making a comeback that you keep your franchise guy in the game?
I agree with Coach Payton's decision to keep Russell Wilson in the game. And here's why. Being in this type of moment, you're trying to learn who you are and who you're surrounded with by, right?
Okay.
And so I've been in situations I just talked about. I've been in situations where I'm down 30, 40, 50, and you start paying attention to how the coach is calling the game and how he's approaching the players. Does he give up? Does he fold, right? You look at the players around you and you're like, yo, are you giving up? Like, who's in this foxhole? So the Seattle Seahawks trade Russell Wilson to the Denver Broncos. They give him the biggest contract at the quarterback position. They're expecting a lot. They're expecting him to come in and be a contender, make the Denver Broncos a contender right away. You got guys like that, right, that we just heard from that's been there for 7 years, and they're like, oh, shit, you're the savior. You're literally the savior. Come and do your job. They didn't do that. So not only did they didn't do that, they had one of the worst years ever, and Russell had his worst year ever. So now they go out and go get another savior and coach Sean Payton. Coach Sean Payton, legendary coach, some say is a Hall of Fame coach. Okay, now you're going to come in. You're going to turn this around right away. So now that you're coming off that year, then two games, like, you know, how they started the season, you can't now say, all right, guys, go sit on the sideline. No, I need to see who you really are, Coach Payton. I need to see who you really are, Russell Wilson. I need to see what this defense is going to do, because they're going to turn on film this morning and they're going to say, oh, y'all supposed to be a top five defense. How the hell did we let Tyreek Hill and all these guys do what they did? Mostert? Like, he is, I like him. I like him. But he looked like he was LaDainian Tomlinson. How did we do that? I don't care what's going on the offensive side. You do your job. How did we let them do that? There's still things that they can correct on the defensive side, and that's what comes to life. All right? That's what comes to life in games like this. And that's why you leave your starters in, because right now as we speak, guys are trickling into the Broncos facility and they're going to watch this film, and it's really uncomfortable and be like, damn, I got 10 loaves.
I hear it, and I'm not totally disagreeing with guys staying in the fire and working through it. I'm not disagreeing with that. But at some point, you got to pull your guy out.
Why?
At some point. When it is so far by the point of return, and it got to the point of no return pretty quickly into the second half.
So what are you going to do? So if you pull Russell Wilson out, are you now then pulling out Jerry Jeudy?
But let me play devil's advocate. Okay. You keep Russell Wilson in that game. Let's say Miami wasn't taking their foot off the gas, because they did. Miami pulled their starters, and they were starting to dwindle back a little bit. They were starting to be like, all right, he's already dead. You know, Rocky was, he's already dead. Throw him the towel. Right. Like, that's what Mike McDaniel and the Miami Dolphins were doing. Let's say the Dolphins didn't do that. Or let's say the second unit decided, we're not going to stop playing. Yeah, we're not the starters, but we're still coming for your neck. Russell Wilson gets hurt, then what? How do you explain your decision?
This is the game. You
but
know what?
Let me tell you. Let me tell you. This is
what I'm saying.
Quarterback in a game that there was no returning.
So first
from.
Off, I want to say this. I appreciate what Coach Payton said in his post presser. He said it's not just players, it's coaches as well. So it's not just coach sitting there and putting a blame all on the players. But this is what I would do if I'm Coach Payton. Mm-hmm. I would come in the meeting room and say, if y'all don't want to be out there, then don't freaking put us in this position. Why, 70-20? What are we talking about here? 70-20? No, go out there and I want to see what I got. Coach Payton, he hasn't been in the fire with Russell Wilson. He has with Drew. This isn't Drew Brees. You know, Jerry Jeudy isn't Mike Thomas. Right? Their running backs isn't Alvin Kamara or Mark Ingram. So he needs to know exactly who he's dealing with. And the players need to know what type of coach they have, because that was part of the conversation last year was, oh, Coach Nathaniel Hackett, when it got real tough and it got real sticky, he started rocking around the facility with his hoodie on. He stopped talking. He's changed up. Where's that energy that you had in preseason?
I hear you. I'm not disagreeing with the concept of keeping your guy in to work through whatever issues are transpiring on the field or try to go ahead and pull you out of the deficit that you're in. But at some point, you have to realize, okay, this is it. Like this, we're not pulling ourselves out of this situation. So what lesson does Russell Wilson learn? Let's go ahead and play the lessons game. What lesson does Russell Wilson and the starters learn by staying in an additional quarter that they didn't already learn the first three quarters they were getting blown out?
Let me tell you. So Russell Wilson is a guy, he's like a Tom Brady, right? Like he's never going to give up.
Tom Brady would have been pulled out.
But stay with me, okay. 28-3, and he's still not going to give up. I remember a legendary moment. This isn't the 28-3 moment, but sitting there watching Sunday Night Football, Tom's down by like three scores playing against the Atlanta Falcons, and same Atlanta Falcons, and he comes back and win when everybody on the sideline was down and out and thought it was over. Russell Wilson's in that category. That's why if you study his statistics over the first 10 years, he's one of the most clutch quarterbacks the game has ever seen. So if I'm Russell Wilson, I'm still in that situation, it's 100% uncomfortable. It definitely hits your ego. You definitely sitting there saying, damn, like Sierra, my wife, they in the box. They looking at me. I got little future. I got baby future who look up to me. And he going to be like, daddy, what happened? Daddy, what happened? So 100%. And then you're sitting there as a player and you're like, damn, you're thinking about this. Man, what are they saying on the broadcast? I know they're highlighting all my woes from last year. I know they're saying I'm cooked. You're thinking about that. But a guy like Russell Wilson sitting there saying, I'm still going to put my best foot forward. And I'm not even going to show them that I'm breaking. And so now what happens is we break the huddle. I got Jerry Jeudy. I got Courtland Sutton out there. I got my tight end. I got my running backs, whatever. Now what I'm doing, if I'm Russell Wilson, is he still running the route 100%? Is this guy still blocking for me? Is this guy still giving me your all? And this is where he's in a tough position. Because if they're not, and I don't think he's comfortable doing this, right now, Monday, this is what Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's doing. What the fuck is this? Excuse my language. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little aggressive, but that's the locker room. Mm-hmm. You get called out, makes it uncomfortable. And so as a leader, you got to understand that, you know, when to push and when to pull. And this is a moment for me where if I'm Sean Payton and Russell Wilson, I'm calling guys out depending on what they put on
field. Of course. I just think that at times you also have to save your player from themselves. And I think that Russell Wilson wasn't going to learn any more of a lesson from this game, and that those starters weren't going to learn any more of a lesson from this game that they didn't already learn in the first three quarters. Okay. At some point, you also have to think long term. At some point, you also have to prepare yourself for what the possibility is if you have him out there in a meaningless game.
Right.
And that is the possibility of him getting hurt. The next game, the game after that, now the whole season's in jeopardy. All I'm saying is sometimes you have to save your guy from himself. That's it. The lesson was going to be learned either way.
All right.
But listen.
Well, save me. Move on. Save me.
Here, before we move on to the other side of the ball, I have a question from the chat here. Let me go ahead and get this. This is from Sheldon Jackson. He says, what do you do with Russell Wilson? Because it seems to me that his teammates aren't rocking with him, and it makes Pete Carroll look smart for trading him.
Well, oof. Pete Carroll definitely looks good. I think there was this is what I feel. There was a battle between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. Pete Carroll won at a high level at USC, doing it one way. Mm-hmm. Took that same system, that same approach to the NFL, won a Super Bowl, went to another Super Bowl, one way. Mm-hmm. Pete Carroll really hasn't evolved, right? So now you have a quarterback who comes in, wins in that system with Pete Carroll, but hasn't evolved or wants to evolve into like, I want to get it done like a Patrick Mahomes. I want to get it done like a Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. So now they're beefing, right? Pete Carroll continues on. Russell Wilson goes to another space. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson, all right, here you go. Can you throw it 35, 40 times a game and win it that way? I know what we've seen is Russell Wilson can win at a high level, being able to get out of the pocket.
Right. Magician.
Right, running the ball.
The magic man.
Taking over during clutch times. So I think it's to be determined, but this is a critical year for Russell Wilson, and then we'll be able to say at the end of the year who's right, who's wrong.
Well, listen, while Sean Payton was being criticized for his decision-making or lack thereof, Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel was being praised for his. Despite being in field goal range and the opportunity to beat the NFL's record for most points in a game, McDaniel decided to have the Miami Dolphins take a knee. When asked about his decision by the media, he said, "I'm very okay with the decision. The leaders of the team supported it. The captain supported it. That's not the way you want to get the record. That's called karma, and I want to keep good karma with the Miami Dolphins." We have his full statement here. Take a listen.
"I try to think through all of my decisions and hold them with the importance that they do have. It felt like chasing points and chasing a record. That's not what we came to the game to do. That doesn't have a bearing on the overall season outcome. And I just didn't, I saw it as, in that 10 times out of 10, you concede and kneel down in those situations because there was a attainable record. That was cool, but the message that I thought it would send wasn't really in line with how I view things. So it's awesome to, I think it was the most points since 66 or something. I think that's awesome for a regular season record. You can have that and then suffer the same fate as we had last year. I don't care about that regular season record. It would have been cool, but what we're trying to do, I think that would be talking on both sides of my mouth if we wouldn't try to send the field goal team on and squeeze an extra three. It's not really what I'm about."
The former Denver Broncos ball boy, Mike McDaniel, took pity on a team that he once had a relationship with. "Listen, I'm somebody who believes in karma, Brandon. I'm someone who believes in energy, you know me, auras and crystals and all that stuff. I probably would have gone for the record. Listen, we play to win the game." No, you know what?
Because you do
I'll be
believe
honest.
It.
I'm like, my dad and I were talking about this yesterday, and I'm like 70-30. That probably I would have gone for the record. You know why I would have gone for the record? There's a few things. Because I believe if the roles were reversed, Sean Payton would have went for it. I don't think Sean Payton would have taken pity on the Miami Dolphins. And also, if you remember, the Denver Broncos didn't want to interview Mike McDaniel when they had a head coach vacancy. They didn't think that he was qualified for the position. They didn't even take an interview with him. I'm somebody who, I'm not going to start it, but I'm going to finish it. And I just felt like that was my opportunity to get my lick back. So I probably would have kick the field goal.
So earlier I said
that. But I respect Mike McDaniel's decision not to do it.
Right. And listen, maybe this is why Coach Payton has struggled since they won, their last Super Bowl.
Maybe the
I think their Super Bowl was 2006 or 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. And since then, if you think about it, they play lights out throughout the regular season. And then when it comes to postseason, they fold, one and done. They out of there. Maybe that's the reason why, because Coach Payton maybe he got the bad karma,
bad
the bad
juju.
Juju
around him.
That's right.
Maybe.
That's right. And then also I would say this, though, because everybody, I see that's coming up. Mike McDaniel wasn't on anybody's radar like that. Like, you had to do the teams that did real work and peeled back the layers and, like, went through an extensive process, realized that, oh, this is a guy, right? But I don't blame the Denver Broncos for not interviewing Coach Mike McDaniel. When this happened, I called the 49ers. I was like, what is this? What's going on? They was like, yeah, he's a little quirky, this and that.
Saints won in 09.
I think what makes Coach McDaniel special, and I'm glad that he made this decision, but what makes Coach McDaniel special is that we know he's an X and O's guys, but guys want to follow him.
He's a good person.
He's weird. He's different. But he leads in a powerful way in his own way. Mm-hmm. And you need to have that. You can't just be a guy in the locker room these days just saying, okay,
no,
I know the X's and O's. I know football. You got to be able to be relatable, and he's that for the guys.
He definitely seems to have a good repertoire with his guys. They want to follow him. They want to be around him. The fans seem to really enjoy him. There was an image circulating that at halftime he was up in the stands talking to some Dolphins fans.
At halftime,
like in between commercial breaks. Sorry, in between commercial breaks, he just kind of was talking to some fans in the stands and stuff like that. But Yeah, listen, I commend the decision. Like I said, I don't know if I would have been, I don't know, maybe if they caught me on a good day when I like meditated and did my sage the morning of, I probably would have given them mercy. But if they caught me on a day where I had my petty streak, I would have went for the kick.
Well, also you got to think about this as an unwritten rule as well, because
not to humiliate your opponent.
Yeah, like general managers, coaches around the league won't respect that, right? Because like you got to think about that.
Yeah.
We go into 4-minute offense. That's situational football. Usually you do that 4 minutes left in the game. The game is over or you are in control. Don't pass the ball, run the ball. The Dolphins pretty much went into 4-minute offense at the end of the third quarter, mm-hmm. right? So he made the right decision before like they were even close to this record. Remember, they took out Tua and he put in his JV team.
Right.
And then they came in and did the thing. Robbie Anderson scored.
That's my point.
Right? The like, running back take off for a 50
that's
piece.
That's kind of my point. Like, I already gave you mercy. I took my starters out and they still were washing you. At that point, it's out of my hands.
I know, right? That's what I'm saying.
At that point, it's no longer. What Tyler Perry say? It's above me.
Right,
now.
Right,
like,
right.
So.
But that's not when you say the karma, let's say, you know, because this thing, you know, it's inevitable for us to get fired or the league to spit us out, right? When you do things like this, this is when a Sean Payton, who may be in position, he might be a president of a team one day. Mm-hmm. He might be a general manager, right? This is when Coach Payton comes to say, I'm going to give you your next opportunity.
Okay. Well, we shall see. Listen, we're going to move on from one team that underperformed to another. And listen, you can't win them all, Dion. The Colorado Buffaloes took on the Oregon Ducks on Saturday in their first matchup against a school in the top 10 of the AP Top 25. Now, prior to the start of the game, Ducks head coach Dan Lanning was ready to silence all the hoopla that has been following Deion Sanders and Colorado. He said, quote, they're fighting for clicks, we're fighting for wins. Listen to this.
Rooted in substance, not flash, rooted in substance. Today, we talk with our pads. You talk with your helmet, right? Every moment. The Cinderella story is over, man. Right? They're fighting for clicks, we're fighting for wins. There's a difference, right? There's a difference, right? This game ain't gonna be played in Hollywood, it's gonna be played on the grass, right? It's gonna be played on the grass. Let's go.
Listen, you know, I've been rocking with Deion and the Colorado
right.
Buffs. You know, I love me some Deion Sanders, but that was a bar. They're fighting for clicks. We're fighting for wins. That was a bar.
That was a bar, but it was clear that, you know, this coach, he played his cards right. He didn't come out like other coaches in the past or the last few weeks that did the trash talking throughout the week. He waited, right?
Right.
He waited. And then also
pre-game.
There was a moment, you saw what happened when they came out. They had primetime little thing and the mascot came out and smashed
it,
but then karma hit him because his mask fell off, right?
Yes.
So here's what I would say, and I'm not going to try to be too preachy with everybody out there. Deion Sanders can't lose. Hold on, where's my single shot? Because I want to make sure. Where are we at? Right here? Boom. Deion Sanders can't lose. What we're witnessing, and this is a lesson for all of us right now, what we're witnessing is a man that's truly aligned with God and his purpose, right? And so I'm going to say this. Stay with me here. When you pray to God and ask God to give you the desires of your heart, and that matches up with the will that he has over your life, then it's already done. It's not about just this season with Deion Sanders. It's about what he's called to do for the next couple of years in his career, however long he stay in college. So one thing about our culture is this. We fight. We stick together. So what's happening in this moment is a 5-star recruit sitting in their living room, right? And this is what I'm talking about, how Deion can't lose. He's called. A 5-star, the culture, sitting in their living room. When they see this clip, they're not going to gravitate to Oregon and this coach. What they're going to do is they're going to say, I got Deion's back. So those guys that y'all competing over, they're actually gravitating to Deion and not this coach. The culture, that's what the culture do. You got to think about. Tribe. Stick together. They're not sitting there like, oh, Deion lost the game and he's selling us false hope. No, they're not doing that. What they're looking at in this moment is, I'm the one that's going to make sure Deion wins and the Colorado Buffs win next time they face Oregon. So Deion is sitting there just saying thank you because he knows. He knows exactly what he's called to do, and he's confident in that. And just like he said after the game, Ashley, what'd he say?
Well, we're going to dive into that. Listen, the Ducks would go on to dominate the Buffaloes 42-6. Now, following the loss, Deion Sanders did not shy away from the media. In fact, he actually waived off personnel after his time had passed to extend his time in the media room to answer more questions. He told one reporter, quote, teams are trying to beat me. They're not trying to beat our team. Listen to this.
Right. I don't think it's a target on that back. I just think this just teams are trying to beat me. They're not trying to beat our team. They keep forgetting I'm not playing anymore. I had a great career. I'm serious. I got a gold jacket, ain't back. So I'm good. But that's what it really is. I don't think they get any extra satisfaction, you know. It is what it is. And I signed up for it, so let's go.
Now, the Buffaloes will go on to face number 8 USC on Saturday. So it's going to be another tough matchup for Colorado. But listen, I think we all knew that this was going to happen. I don't think anybody really expected the Colorado team to go undefeated. Let's be honest. This is a team that went 1-11 last season. What Deion is doing for Colorado, what he's doing for Boulder, Colorado, what he's doing for the program, what he's doing for college football in general should be celebrated. But it's not going to result in some championship. Like, I think that we also have to be realistic. We've enjoyed the wins, but this was always going to come to an end at some point. If it wasn't going to be against Oregon, it was going to be against USC. These are programs that are in the top 10, like I said, of the AP 20, top 25. So it's interesting to me that people are so celebratory of Deion and the Buffaloes losing against a team that they probably were going to lose against. Anyway,
right.
It's more of your. It seemed to me, and the tweets came out. You know, there were a lot of tweets that came out, and there was a lot of undertones to those tweets.
Right.
It seems more to me that people are celebrating the humbleness or the humbling, or what they think is the humbling of Deion Sanders and this Colorado team, more than they're celebrating the fact that the Ducks won. They don't give a damn that the Ducks won. They're not out here watching Ducks games. They're just happy that Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes, who have, you know, Master P and Lil Wayne on the sidelines and all the cameras are on them. Everybody wants to interview Deion. Everyone wants to talk about Colorado. You know, they come out with the swag. They come out with the waving of the watches. They come out with a different type of vibe, a different type of culture, a cultural backing. They're just happy that now all of that has been diminished a little bit because they took an L. It has absolutely nothing to do with what happened on that field.
Listen, all of
us. And that's what's gross about it.
Yes, but all of us should be, whenever how Deion's moving, we all should be taking notes, right? Like, we talk about confidence, you talk about self-love. You talk about understanding yourself and being confident and unapologetic of who you are and walking in rooms and never switching up. That's where we all want to get to. Now, you don't have to be in your face or, you know, almost like flamboyant like a Deion. Now, it could show up differently, but we need to be taking notes, right? And the reason why I say, when you're talking like, why is it interesting for a lot of us? Because I saw those same tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it interesting when Deion was the same way in college?
Exactly.
Deion was the same way in the league. Deion was the same way when he went into his media career. Deion was the same way coaching high school football. He was the same way at Jackson, right? Like, why are we shocked? And the reason why I'm saying take note is because Deion Sanders also lost more than he ever won. Deion dealt with, you know, suicide ideation in a prime of his career. Deion dealt with divorce. Deion dealt with, you know, challenges as a parent, that all these things that he talked about publicly, talked about on our show here, I and Matthew, when he joined us with the Big Pod. Like, Deion Sanders suffered loss in the NFL. He lost Super Bowls. He was cut or traded from teams, right? But he knows who he is, and he's walking in that.
And it's interesting because
you don't waver in moments like this.
Listen, I can understand people saying that the idolization of Deion Sanders and the Buffaloes is not enough. Like, what he's doing for college football is great, but he has to win. I agree with that. Eventually, the glitz, the glamour, the flashiness is only going to go so far. You still have to produce the results. You still have to win. This is his first year with this team. They're already better than what they were last year. They already were better. You know, they already have more eyes on them than they had last year. So, yes, does he have to win? Will all of the the newness of him at Colorado take him into next season, right, the season after that? No, eventually you have to produce.
No, time out. But think about what I just said. Sorry to cut you off, but I want to be clear here.
Yeah.
Deion can't lose.
No. What I'm saying.
I know what you're saying, Ash. I'm tracking you.
Yeah.
But Deion can't lose. The winning is going to happen. He's going to win a national championship. He's going to potentially win multiple championships. Why? Because Deion Sanders can recruit, and Deion Sanders can coach, and he knows how to build a team. So it's just a matter of time, and he has to work his process. So I'm agreeing with you there.
Saying, what my point was going to be was I can understand the folks who are on the side of love Deion, love what he's doing for college football,
right,
love what he's doing with the Buffaloes, but eventually the results have to come. I agree with those
so
people.
So can I speak to those people?
Well, but before we get to that, I agree with those people.
Why?
Because eventually the flashiness and all of that gets old. It gets tired if there's no results backing that up. I agree with those people. The people I don't agree with are the people who were counting down the days until this team took their first loss.
Right, those are
not
haters.
For any other reason than they hate what Deion Sanders has turned college football into. They hate that there's a program that was 1-11 last year,
yep,
that now has all the eyes on them, all the swagger, all the cultural backing behind them, and could not wait till that man took his first loss with this team. It is a personal vendetta for whatever reason. They don't like the swag, they don't like the energy, whatever the case may be. Those people don't matter. Those people will never be satisfied. There are people like us who, mm-hmm, what he is doing for college football is huge, and it will continue to get bigger. But of course, the results have to come, because we can't talk about, you know, the chain and the glasses and the hats and all that stuff next season.
But what I'm saying, but what
we,
I guess
we,
what I'm
we
saying
have
is,
to get the wins, what I, and what, we're okay with that.
I guess what
that.
I'm
They'll
saying
come.
Is, this is like what I'm saying is some really deep stuff, right? Like, and that's what I said. Like, I don't want to preach to anybody. But there's only one Deion. There will never, ever be another Deion. You got to think about the type of impact that you have in your game and then in culture, then being able to take that to bring it to something different. We're really witnessing one of the most powerful men in our community. Like, he's Deion Sanders. I be moving with dudes in Houston, Dallas, that's in the streets. Deion is connected to them people, and he's connected to the Obamas, and he's connected to the commissioners and people here to brands. This is a dude that's bringing two worlds together,
right,
and he's staying true to who he is. And so when I'm speaking to those people that think that Deion Sanders isn't going to lose, and I'm telling them, you guys are sadly mistaken.
He isn't gonna win.
Why? Or win. You guys are sadly mistaken, because Deion Sanders can coach.
Yes.
And Deion Sanders can recruit.
Yes.
And moments like this is when the culture actually rallies behind him, because you just got to think about our culture, tribal. All those five-star recruits that all these other coaches are trying to recruit, and I've already said this already, they're now saying, I got your back.
Yes.
I got your back. Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if Deion Sanders have a slogan in the next 24 hours rallying all these people, like, yo, watch who I'm calling, watch who comes
in. Deion is winning, and he's going to continue to win. Anybody who expected that this team was going to go ahead and take down the Oregon Ducks or the USC Trojans in their first year coming off of a 1-11 season has not been watching college football.
Wishful thinking.
They are winning. They are going to continue to win. It is growing pains. It's not going to happen overnight, but I believe that what he's doing for this Colorado team is going to come into some serious fruition in the next few seasons.
Christy O said Kanye West's exact words. I don't want to preach to nobody, but hey,
y'all, you know I'm
getting tapped into my spirit right now.
All right, well, listen,
you know what I'm saying?
You tap into your spirit while I tap into this next topic. All right, we talked Buffaloes, we talked Ducks, we're going to talk some Bears now. Okay, it's been a tough week for the Chicago Bears, and things got a whole lot tougher yesterday afternoon when the team was blown out in their matchup with Kansas City, losing 10-41. Now, Justin Fields went 11 for 22 with one touchdown, one interception, and a 58.7% passer rating. He also had 99 passing yards. Now, speaking about QB1, before the game, Jay Glazer of Fox Sports said that the Bears remain undecided on committing to Justin Fields as their long-term quarterback. Listen to this report.
big thing here is Justin Fields. Right now, the jury's still out whether he's their quarterback of the future. And yeah, he had a little bumpy ride this week with their coaches. What they're going to do for him this week, however, is they're going to have a lot more design runs for him. They're going to have a lot more plays where he's rolling out of the pocket on the throw. But they've also told him, look, if you don't see anything after your first and second read, just throw the ball. But Justin Fields still has a ways to go to convince the Chicago Bears that he is their quarterback of the future. And that's the reason they went out and got another number one pick for this year's draft.
All right, Brandon. Well, listen, they made adjustments to the game plan for Justin Fields. It still did not result in a win for the Chicago Bears. They fall to 0-3 to start the season. This report that the Bears are not committed, or rather they're deciding on their commitment to Justin Fields in the long term. I mean, what do you make of this? This is the first time we're hearing this. There may have been some speculation, right, but this is the first time this has been said as a solidified report.
This is what I would say. If Deion Sanders was coaching Justin Fields would be having a really good year. Mm-hmm. And I say that because last week it was a big issue around coaching. He made a comment saying, you know, well, the reporters asked him, you know, what's going on, and he sat there, thought about it, and he said, coaching. You know, I got too much going on in my head. I'm overthinking. I'm not playing my game. And so I will say this, that's not the best approach, but it was an honest approach. And you got to be careful as an athlete, someone who has a platform like this, because what you say is going to spread, and you can't count on the media to get it right. You can't then have another press conference and say, you know, well, look, you guys are taking my words and doing what you want with them. No, like once it's out there, it's out there. So you have to be very strategic in what you're saying. Ashley, I was there, right? I saw this kid. Week one.
Okay.
He's special. Now, I don't know what's happening in the meeting rooms. I don't know how he's processing football. I don't know how he's taking coaching. But what I can tell you is this. From a talent standpoint, he can make every throw on the field. From a talent standpoint, his escapability in the pocket, all of that.
One second.
All of that, like, it's next level. I saw it. I've been on so many football fields. I've been around so many athletes. And there's, when you walk out there, some dudes, you don't even have to see some dudes on the field. Sometimes you can just see how a dude just put on his damn socks and his cleats and in the locker room, like, okay, this dude got something. He got a little oomph to him. He has it. So to me, who is the right coach that can bring it out of him? Who's the right coach that can get to him? There's a coach out there, and that's on the Chicago Bears, that's management, Ryan Poole, that's on the McCaskies, the ownership, to figure out who is the right coach for him. They should fire this offensive coordinator. They should have fired him last week when Justin Fields made these comments. They should have looked at him and said, bro, you can't do that. You're a leader. But moving forward, we're going to put you in the best position. The Chicago Bears are going to continue to be in at the bottom of the barrel. It's everybody else's fault. No, put the right people in place. You did a great job with management. Ryan Poole's a phenomenal hire. I love the moves he's making. Now you got to get the right coaches in there.
Brandon, you're –
come on, talk to me.
Push back on you.
Please
do. You're making a lot of excuses for Justin Fields. You're making a lot of excuses for him. Is it a coaching issue? Possibly, probably. Is it not having the right weapons around you? Possibly, probably. Is it a Justin Fields problem? Possibly, probably. You talk about him being special. You talk about him and all these things that he has. That's fantastic. But if it doesn't resonate to the game, it's useless to me.
Okay.
It's useless to Chicago. It's useless to the Bears. It's useless to the fans. So what I'm saying is that having all the intangibles and having all the aspects of a great quarterback, right, and all the physical abilities is fantastic. But if they don't translate, if you can't produce wins with them, then what good does it serve a purpose?
So,
and I think that Justin Fields, because the Bears are a shit show of an organization.
Okay.
That's the nicest way I can put it.
Okay.
From top to bottom in so many different departments, I think that because there is so much blame to go around, that a lot of the times Justin Fields escapes the blame that is very much directed and should be directed to him. Because yes, the coaching, the front office, all of that trash. The organization has put together, trash.
Yep.
But Justin Fields has not shown that he is a franchise quarterback, I feel like, even in small increments.
Okay.
Because 0-3, 41-10, Justin, I mean, come on, that means you gave me one touchdown, you passed the ball only 99 times.
Yeah.
I mean, 90 for 99 yards.
Right.
You want me to think that this is the guy that can go ahead when I give him everything he needs to succeed? I'm supposed to believe that he can still take me where I want to be with this team?
So one of the I struggle in this seat. I struggle in this seat because, like, sometimes I could be over-analytical, and I try to give too much information. And it's this thing called mentalization where you try to see other people's perspective, right? One of the reasons why a lot of players get mad at former players when they're now analysts or they're doing television mm-hmm. because it's like, bro, you sat in these seats. Mm-hmm. How can you go out there and give this surface level answer or analysis when you sat in these seats? Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I always think about this. I'm like, all right, when I think about any show that I'm on, I always think about what seat do I occupy? And so when we talk sports, I always put myself in the shoes or in the seat of a former player. So, like, when I think about Justin Fields in the situation, remember, I came out, I said, Deion Sanders was coaching him, he'd probably be playing better.
How
because
do you know
I know
that?
Because it's because there's a big part of us unlocking our full potential is the people that we have around us. I know a guy like that. One of the things I asked someone from Ohio State when he was coming out, I said, tell me about this guy. They said he can do everything right, but one of the things is he could overthink things. He wants it too much, too bad, right? Which tells me he's a guy, like, if he's not fully aligned with the coaches, there's going to be a lot of friction, which means that production and performance is going to be low. So what I'm saying to you is, I've been in situations before where I see a guy like this who has the talent, and then it's like, yo, this coaching is just terrible, or he doesn't have the pieces. Remember, I said it. Like, I'm not in the meeting rooms with Justin Fields.
But I agree
I don't know how he takes coaching. But what I do know is, let's say he's doing all the wrong things behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. The right coach can come in and unlock all that potential.
But you don't know that for certain, though. I'm not disagreeing with you. Okay. I'm not saying that coaching is not a problem. Yep. I'm not saying that the team, meaning the pieces around Justin Fields, are not a problem. I said this when he was drafted there, that if Chicago does not do right by him, they're going to waste the first few years of his career. And lo and behold, that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. But I think that we also cannot rid Justin Fields of accountability. He has the arm. He has the physical ability. He does not go through his progressions. You don't see him in the game going through his
checkdowns. Let me tell you why, though. But that's coaching.
He doesn't seem to be able to read defenses.
That's coaching.
As a quarterback, he not being able to read defenses. Justin,
No. He's not able to read defenses.
You don't think that he's not able? He's not very good at reading defenses.
Who says?
You can see it in the game.
Tell me.
You don't see him going through his checkdowns. Having all of the talent, and I agree.
This is why this is important. Before you go there, and you don't have to go in depth, but there's a lot of people that say that. So anybody who's out there saying that never sat in those shoes before, tell me, like, give me black and white definitive answers of how we know he can't read defenses.
Brandon, let me go ahead and give you a comparison. What happened when Patrick Mahomes won his first Super Bowl? What did he say?
I understand that.
What I'm asking you is, what did he say when he won his first Super Bowl?
He said that, I'm just now starting to learn defenses.
Okay.
You know, I just went out there and played.
Okay. Do you think that his inability to read defenses was on the coach, or was it on him?
All right.
And his able to overcome that, was it on the coach, or was it on him? That's what I'm saying.
Let me say it this. Hold on. Let me say No. Let me say it this way. No, hold on. Time out. Before Patrick Mahomes sat on the shop, uninterrupted, the shop, uh-huh. and made that comment,
uh-huh.
none of us knew that he wasn't reading defenses. We thought he was
right.
just the greatest thing out
but
there in the world.
You just proved my point. You just
How did I prove your point?
Because we didn't know because he was able to
we
do
We didn't
what?
Know because we don't. We never sat in those because seats and we don't know what cover two is, what cover three is. Talk to me. All these people out there that want to judge these players on Sunday, quick analysis, give their opinions. Tell me what cover two is and tell me the responsibility of a wheel backer when it's three
Brandon.
By one and then you take the three, move them to the left side of the field, and now you got a 2x2. Tell me the responsibilities.
I'm not making excuses.
What I'm showing you is it's easy for us to sit up there and say, let's hold Russell Wilson accountable. Let's hold Justin Fields accountable. That's easy. But when you can really sit back and you can judge a player and say he did not do his job on his play because X, Y, and Z, then I can't hear from you. I don't know if Justin Fields isn't making the right reads. I don't know if he can't read defenses.
I didn't say he we're can't. Not in the, we're not, he's in... not reading them fast enough.
How do we know
his
that?
His decision-making's not fast enough. What well, do you, that's the coach's fault that he can't make a decision
Well, the
fast
reason
enough?
Why I went to the coach's, is the coach's fault is because, like, there's a clip. I don't know if you can find this, Wu. Last week when we were talking about Justin Fields and the Chicago Bears, there was the one where Jay Cutler broke the huddle. And Jay Cutler told the offensive coordinator, F you, which is the head he was the head coach at the time, Mike Martz. So find that. So basically, Jay Cutler breaks the huddle, and he looks at the coach and says, tell Mike Martz, tell him F you. That's what he said. Yes, Justin Fields, if he's not, your job as a coach is to put your players in position to win. Identify what they do well and unlock that. It's not about your plays, it's about the players. That's what really good coaches do. So right now they have him in a system that doesn't work for him. So of course he's going to be overthinking. Of course he's not going to be playing well. But what I do know is if Mike Shanahan or Kyle Shanahan was his head coach, I guarantee he'd be playing better.
So you don't have any – so there's no accountability for you with Justin Fields?
100%.
Where is it? Because 100%. I hear you blaming the coach. I hear you blaming the front office. I hear you blaming the fact that he doesn't have the talent around him, which is all factual. You have yet to sit here and say that Justin Fields needs to be better at X, Y, Z. If he had Deion Sanders, if he had Shanahan, well, guess what? He doesn't. So yep. What are you doing in the interim? Because there have been a lot of quarterbacks, and we always sit up here and we say that the quarterback gets the blame, the quarterback also gets the glory. But that seems to go out the window when we talk about Justin Fields, because you have blamed every single person in the Bears organization for Justin Fields' shortcomings, except for Justin Fields. What is he doing to make sure that he is in a position to be better until
Justin
the team
Fields,
and situation
Justin
around
Fields,
him gets better?
Justin,
where?
Justin Fields works his ass off. He does a phenomenal job taking care of himself. And like I said, when I did my homework on Justin Fields, when he left Ohio State, I reached out to guys that I played with that's also still in that building that's coaching him. And they said, this kid can do everything. He's extremely smart. The only knock is he may overthink it. He may be doing too much, right? And so this kid has the ability, and I've seen it. He has the talent. Now what it comes down to is, do they have the right coaches around them? And the answer is no. So yes, is there things that players can lean into to get better? Absolutely. But when we talk about Justin Fields being the Justin Fields that they drafted him to be, it takes way more than just Justin Fields going out there and doing what he's supposed to do. The coaching is bad. The coaching's bad. So I can't blame him right now. I can't do it. You had that. You don't got to go to Vu. I see that you text me. You don't have to go to that video. We're good. But, no, I'm not blaming Justin Fields. I'm blaming the coach and Ashley. I'm sorry.
All right. Listen, I like Justin Fields, too, but I just feel like if we're going to keep it 100, we got to keep it 100 across the board, and I just feel like you're letting him off easy. But
This is what I was trying to respectfully say, and I'm not trying to throw anybody in the bus. But right now, Ashley, if I asked you to draw up cover 4 and everybody's responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
would you be able to do that?
No.
Could you do cover 3?
What difference does that make? Let me tell you why.
Because I'm not saying that I don't respect people's opinions who haven't played the game, but what I'm saying is when we give deep analysis on did he make the right decision or not, can he read defenses, yes or no, is he going through his process, you can't say that. I'm talking about anybody else, because this happens a lot on FS1 and Fox, ESPN. You can't give that type of analysis if you don't know what cover 3 or cover 4 is. Because when you watch every single play, let me tell you how we watch plays. We go through all 77 plays. We have 77 plays on offense. So now we go through every single one. Okay, here's our play. We got 3-by-1. Now we're going boom, 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 boom against cover 4. Everybody's responsibilities are different against cover 4 than is cover 3, cover 2. So when we're watching these plays and if we want to say if a guy did his job or not, then you have to know what their responsibility was against this particular coverage. If you can't do that, your damn opinion means nothing. And that's why players need to do a great job of, when they're on their platforms, holding media accountable and also keeping it real and stop giving surface level conversation. That quick media commentary shit is dead. Like, that's all I'm saying to media out there. I don't know what the responsibility is. I don't even know what the play is called. And some people coach it differently. We might have trips right, and we might go dragon lion, right? And one coach say, hey, this is your responsibility. And another coach might do something differently. A guy can throw an interception, and then I'll land with this. super passionate about this. I'm tired. I'm like, athletes, we got to use our platforms right. A quarterback can throw an interception and still get a good grade. He can still have a passing grade on that play. We're graded on every single play. Why is that? Because he did what the coach told him to do, and the coach actually put him in a bad position against that particular coverage. So,
I think that's a ridiculous argument. I think it's a shitty argument to make. The fact that I've played Madden. Do you want me to go ahead and approach a real life football game like a Madden game? Sure, I can do that. But if we want to go ahead and dive into, last time I checked, you didn't play quarterback.
Who?
You. Last time I checked.
I did play quarterback.
Okay,
one.
Well,
quarterback.
If I asked you how to go ahead and do a lot of things when it comes to production, a lot of things when it comes to journalism, could you do that?
No, so basically what I'm saying, in football, my job.
I let you talk. Now it's my turn.
What I'm saying is that
you go ahead and you throw the whole athlete thing out there, and that's fine if you want to go ahead and play that card.
That's the card that any athlete can play.
I don't need to be an athlete to go ahead and dissect that in 3 years, Justin Fields has shown that he has all of the physical talent, has all of the intangibles, but they have not translated to a game. I don't need to go ahead and draw up plays. I don't need to go ahead and call plays.
Why not?
I don't need to do any of that to tell you that what I have seen in 3 years, he is no longer a rookie. He is not fresh into the NFL, and you're giving him the excuse of being able to say, he's getting accustomed to the speed of the NFL game. It has been 3 years, and you still want me to sit back here and say that there's no accountability, and it's the coaching. It's the front office. It's the Chicago Bears. It's the players. It's the media. None of it's Justin Fields, right? He is perfect. He's absolutely perfect. He does nothing wrong. Is that what you want me to tell? I need to be a football player to dissect that. Is that what I'm hearing?
So first off, you're taking it personal.
I'm not taking it personal. You made
first
it personal
off,
when you brought up the drawing of plays.
No, I'm using an example for anybody in media, including players, right? So in media, if there's somebody out there that said that this player did something wrong, then tell me how.
Hold on one second.
Because when we're looking at ball, everybody has an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
So you get graded on, did you do your job, yes or no? So we have to, one, know what their assignment is versus this particular defense. So if we're watching a game, we can give our opinion, we can give color, but if we want to get to the science of it, and grade a player, then you have to know the assignment versus this particular coverage. So that's what I'm saying. Not just for you, it's for anybody out there.
Okay.
So that's what I'm leaning into 100%. And then also for players, they go into this whole trap because it's this first take, this undisputed culture has been created where you just got to give hard takes. And we go out there and we just say, Dak Prescott's ass. Well, tell me how Dak Prescott's ass. Well, Justin Fields is done. He's a bust. Well, tell me how he's a bust. Because if we're saying that it takes management, ownership, players to actually make this whole thing go, then let's talk about it, right? We can't just blame one person. If we want to, then tell me how. And so players need to do a better job of actually using the skill set that they developed over so many years and know how to break the game down instead of trying to give color and just make these hot takes. And that's all I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to disrespect. I'm making it clear
so that that's clear before we move on. I wasn't putting the blame on Justin Fields. I'm simply saying he's not rid of blame. There's enough blame to go around,
sure,
and a lot of
sure.
that, and it falls in his lap as
for
well.
Sure.
But
sure.
we can go ahead and move on. Since we're talking about the Bears and the Chiefs, we would be remiss to talk about probably the biggest storyline that came out of Kansas City, and it wasn't the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs completely demolished the Chicago Bears. It was that Travis Kelce has been shooting his shot at a particular pop star since July, and well, he finally scored. The 12-time Grammy winner known as Taylor Swift made her debut in the Chiefs' kingdom, and she was seated in Travis Kelce's personal suite next to no other than Donna Kelce, a.k.a. Mama Kelce. Look at this.
It's a fantastic contest. Most of you will get that. Others will catch the Dallas Cowboys.
First of all, she's loving the game. She said, let's effing go.
I think that picture sums up the day.
after she said, "Let's effing go," after Travis Kelce scored a touchdown in the game. She was extremely ecstatic. The camera kept panning to her multiple times throughout the game. If you go to ESPN and all those sites, I think they tweeted and posted about this maybe like 15, 12 times. But listen, Patrick Mahomes, he is more than Travis Kelce's quarterback. He is also his wingman, because he said that he knew that Taylor Swift was going to be coming to this game, so he had to make sure that he made Travis Kelce look extra good. Listen to this.
How about this? You tell us this week, Patrick Mahomes, it's going to take some time for this offense to click. How many points did you score? 41? What did it just take? A couple of days? What do you got?
Yeah, no, it was fun. It's always a work in progress, but it was fun to kind of have this offensive explosion and get things going in the right direction. We got to keep building. We got to keep building a lot of young receivers. I was glad to get the run game going and get some of those guys going as well.
I was going to say, what did you enjoy the most about this offense clicking today? What did you like?
Yeah, I think getting the run game going was the biggest thing for me. I mean, it gets lost when you see the high flying of the NFL today, but when you get that run game going, the whole offense goes, and I was proud of the O-line and the running backs doing that.
Three touchdowns for you today. Listen, you're a guy that can deal with some pressure. Forget the pressure from Kansas City Chiefs fans. Do you realize how much pressure there was on you today from the Swifties to get Travis Kelce a touchdown with Taylor in the house today?
Yeah, I heard she was in the house.
Did you feel it? Did you feel the pressure, Patrick?
I felt a little bit of pressure. And so I knew I had to get it to Trav. And, of course, it's on a route that Travis, he does his own thing and just makes up a route, and I throw it to him. So I think he wanted to get in the end zone just as much as all the Swifties wanted him to.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having fun with us.
Listen, Travis Kelce, like I said, has been shooting his shot at Taylor Swift since July. So,
listen,
here we are.
That boy that went to the to the dark side, played with the dark meat.
Brandon, oh, my God.
And then that boy went back. Like, what happened? Because, like, when you think about Travis Kelce, you think about Travis' culture. Like, the culture adopted him. The dances, the way he dressed, the way he talked. You know, his ex was, you know, on the other side, and now he went to the Swiftie. He went to the other end of the spectrum. Travis Kelce said, "The hell with this. I'm going over there." Man, I like this for Travis Kelce, Ashley. He is having a legendary year. He wins the Super Bowl. It's like the perfect storm, playing against his brother. His mom comes on the field, and she, you know, that whole story. When you look up now, he's on every other commercial. I just saw a new commercial last night, like Pfizer. He's on, you know, DirecTV, State Farm. Like, this dude is in his bag, and he continues to win, right? He gets Taylor Swift. We're talking about the number one recording artist on the planet over the last couple years. I think it's back and forth between him and Beyonce.
Her
and Beyonce. Like, this is amazing. Like, this is amazing season that Travis Kelce is in. This is unbelievable. I love it. But, you know, I wasn't expecting him to go there. I thought he was going to stay within the culture, you know. Boy, he went to the other side.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Right? But what comes to mind for you when you think about this relationship?
Nothing. Taylor Swift's one of the biggest artists in the world. I think that she – I don't like when people – and you saw this a lot on Twitter yesterday. I don't like when people play the looks game. Because I feel like there's more, I don't feel like there is so much more to women than just their physical appearance.
Right.
And yes, you may think his ex is more physically attractive.
I didn't say that.
I'm not saying you, I'm saying people.
Okay.
Think that his ex is more physically attractive. Maybe Taylor Swift's not their cup of tea. But Taylor Swift's extremely successful. She's almost a billionaire. She's a self-made billionaire at that. I mean, it's not like I wouldn't say he downgraded. I mean, this is Taylor Swift.
What I would say is, This is major for him, right? Like, this is big.
This is a big deal. This
you know,
is
he's getting into that Hollywood thing. You know, they put together relationships and
all
stuff.
All right, Brandon, we got to move on.
I want to do this real quick.
Really,
can I do this real
right
quick?
Now.
Because
oh
I see the chat.
My
I want to do this.
You are wild.
Hold on, time out. Because, you know, we always have, I want to do this real quick, and you don't see this a lot on live TV. And I see the chat, and you and I, we always have, battles here and there. So if I offended you, I want to say I apologize. But what I was trying to say, okay, what I was trying to say is, like, if you're in media, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're in media, what I was trying to say is this. Like, the critique around a player, mm-hmm. it's okay. It doesn't matter who you are. Anybody can critique a player, but when we go to different levels, I feel like there's certain things that we have to be able to say. So hopefully you didn't take that as, like, oh, I don't think that, you know, you have the ability to critique a player. I That's not what I was saying.
I mean, I would never try to critique an offense or defense in the X's and O's of that, because I would not be able to go toe-to-toe with you on that. So that's not what I was doing. I was keeping it a very much a generic just
take. I call it, do you forgive me?
I forgive you. We can go ahead and move on.
Because you got spicy a little bit. And everybody in the chat was like, where's the save?
And you won't they go. Know we can go.
They know us. They said, where's the save? But it's the same thing. You know how I feel, though?
Yeah.
In basketball, when it's basketball season.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know I got to come extra with it because Ashley in her bag. And I don't know the game the way Ashley know the game.
Okay, that's right? fair. And that's fair. But you could definitely read cover fours and things that I can. I'll give you that. My expertise in that ends at Madden. That's where it ends for me.
Yeah, but I love how you approach the game, both in football and basketball. But, you know, in basketball, when basketball season come, we still doing this, right? You better come with it. I've been studying. I've been watching film.
And listen, I see the chat. We are going to get to the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. Everybody relax, okay? I did not forget that we lost. I got it, okay? I got it. Leave me alone, okay?
Brandon Marshall here. Ashley Nicole Moss, Faction Talk, SiriusXM, Channel 103. And see, fellas, y'all could take notes right here. Don't go to sleep angry with your lady.
God.
Make sure y'all knit that shit in the butt right away. Are we good? Give me. Twin.
All right, listen.
Hey, because listen, when mama ain't good, ain't nothing good.
All right, I'm done. We got one more. We're gonna go to Vegas for a second because listen, Las Vegas is officially Usher's town in the midst of a highly successful residency at Park MGM. The 8-time Grammy winner has another major show in Vegas on the horizon, and it's the Super Bowl halftime show. Listen, Apple Music and the NFL made the announcement yesterday on NFL Sunday, with the help of some famous friends, and we have some of those videos. Here's one with Marshawn Lynch. Check this out.
Hello?
Yo, I'm in the booth. I'm gonna call you right back. Nah, I just gotta put this one part down. I'm gonna call you back.
Hey, hold on. I got something big. I think you're gonna wanna hear this.
I'm at the studio, man.
Your point being?
Man, quit playing with me, man.
Hey, look, you up next for the Super Bowl.
No, for real, don't play like that.
Hey, you stop playing studio, boy.
Are you serious?
I don't understand what you're not understanding. You playing the Apple Music halftime show.
How you know?
I just know.
Put that on everything.
Hey, look, I don't know why you don't believe me. Is there some underlying issue we need to talk about?
Damn. I'm gonna call you back.
Damn. Hope I didn't stress him out. And I'm still trash.
He called him Studio Boy. I love Marshawn.
Studio Boy. Marshawn Lynch. He goes, is there something we need to talk about? Because why are you not believing me? Yeah, funny.
What did he say at the end? And I'm still trash.
Yeah, when he tried to hit the golf. Yeah. So, listen, Marshawn Lynch wasn't the only football player who got into the mix. Deion Sanders called from Colorado. Mm-hmm. Take a listen to this.
Hello?
Yo, I'm in the booth. I'm gonna call you right back. Nah, I just gotta put this one part down. I'm gonna call you back. I'm at the studio, man.
Hard at work. You know, I actually like that. But listen, I heard the news. Super Bowl, baby.
Man, quit playing with me, man.
I don't play. I'm a coach now.
No, for real. Don't play like that.
You're playing the halftime show.
You deserve this.
Are you serious? How you know?
I'm Coach Prime. And Coach Prime is always one step ahead.
This is your moment.
Put that on everything.
He tripping.
Remember,
when you look good, you feel good. When you feel good, you dance good. When you dance good and you sing good, you get to play on the world's largest stage.
Damn. I'm gonna call you back.
You gonna go.
I'm gonna call you back.
But listen, my favorite one has to be this last one, and that is Usher calling Usher. Listen to this.
I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, this one's good.
Hello?
Yo, I'm in the booth. I'm gonna call you right back. Nah, I just gotta put this one part down. I'm gonna call you back. I'm at the studio, man.
I know where you are, and the song is gonna be fine. You get a girl pregnant, it's gonna be a hit, trust me.
Man, quit playing with me, man.
I'm not. I'm actually telling you from the future.
No, for real. Don't play like that.
Listen.
We're doing the Apple Music Halftime Show.
Are you serious?
Yeah, man.
The Super Bowl in Las Vegas.
How you know?
I'm on set shooting the promo for it right now.
Put that on everything.
Would I lie to you?
I need you to get ready. And don't tell anybody you received this call.
Damn. I'm going to call you back.
I'm going to call you back.
So I actually love that one because I think it's just like, you know, when you're, that was such young Usher when right. the Confessions album came out, and it's just going to, I don't know, I just feel like it was such a, had a deeper meaning if you really like dove into it. It's just like, you know, when you're that young, you don't realize what your full potential, right. you have dreams, you have aspirations, and then you fast forward and Usher's this megastar, and he has yeah. all these Grammys, and he's had all the success, a famous, successful residency in Vegas, and now performing at the biggest concert in the world, that's the right. halftime show. Just very cool of that merge between past and present Usher. Odell Beckham and Kim Kardashian also were featured in the rollout yeah. as well.
Well, I wonder if there's more to come. I think this was like one of the best rollouts that we've ever
this
seen.
This is great, yeah.
Like, this was awesome. My notes on this is I wrote down, one, makes sense, and two, Usher's having like this resurgence, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's not too many people in the world, whether it's in sports, the world of sports, the world of entertainment, that can actually evolve, right? Like, you gotta constantly be evolving if you wanna stay relevant, if right. you wanna continue to have that impact, especially the impact that he's had in culture. Ashley, you've only been to Vegas once when you were like a baby, you said?
Yeah, I was like a kid, yeah.
So you really haven't been?
Yeah, no.
Okay, all right, so you haven't been to Vegas. Ashley, I went to the Usher residency.
Did you?
A couple of months ago.
Was it a vibe?
Phenomenal.
Damn.
Oh my goodness. Like, he sells out every single night when they're on. And I'm talking about like the creativity around it. The show's forever changing. Like, he's adding new elements. There's stars that's coming out. Like, it's a whole vibe. Like, you have to go.
I'm gonna go.
You have to.
I'm gonna go.
You know what? You don't be doing a lot.
Yes, I do a lot of stuff.
No, you like you go to dinners and stuff.
No, I travel and
shopping.
And stuff like that. I do stuff. Don't try me.
You gotta do some more domestic stuff. Though.
I know. I haven't really been places within the U.S. like that. But listen, Usher also on top of performing at the halftime show, also on February 11th, will drop his new album, Coming Home. So it is going to be the year
of Usher.
Oh,
he got a new album coming out?
The day of the Super Bowl, yes. So he's got a lot going on in 2024. Listen, we're going to dive back into some more football. And yes, I know you guys are waiting for me to talk about the Cowboys. Like I said, it is coming up. Chill out, relax. Everyone take a deep breath, okay? Stop trying to stress me out. Mac Jones hits below the belt after the Jets fell 0-3 to the Patriots yesterday. The Jets cornerback Sauce Gardner spoke to the media and said that QB Mac Jones hit him in his, quote, private parts after Jones ran a quarterback sneak. Listen to this.
That's not a skirmish, but after the play, you pushed Mac Jones. It looked like he might have done something. Did he do something here that you below the belt?
Man, that's probably the first time that ever happened to me. So, I got tackled. He reached his hand up to try to, like, get me to help him up, and I just, like, moved his hand out the way. So then he get up, he just come up to me like, good job. But while he's saying that, he hit me in my private part, you know what I mean?
Man.
So it's like, I didn't react how I really wanted to, but that was just, like, the reaction that came after that. But I definitely wasn't expecting that. First time, you know, it's the first time for everything, I guess.
And correction, the Jets are sitting at 1-2, not 0-3. 1-2 tied with the Patriots for last AFC East.
You made that mistake?
I just, you know, the Bills game, I felt like the Bills won that one.
Don't be disrespectful.
Sorry. 1-2, not 0-3. So, I mean, Brandon, Mac Jones, I don't know if mm-hmm. you know this, does have a reputation, or he has garnered a reputation for being a little bit of a
little handsy, a little touchy-feely,
a little dirty unnecessarily.
Yeah, hey.
I mean,
we used to say code blue in the locker room with those code blue. Woo! Too much inside information.
Look, I mean, Ashley, make of this? I mean, yeah, you spoke about what happens at the bottom of a pile
that's right.
You know.
I was saying that last week, and you looked at me like I was wild. I said, at the bottom of a what? A scrum, anything goes. Guys are punching, grabbing, twisting, pulling, biting.
Whoa, okay.
Did I go too far? I think it was Channing Crowder. Like, Channing Crowder talked about biting somebody. His helmet came off, and I think he said he ended up biting somebody or something like that. Like, anything goes. You got to understand, like, the psyche that you – think about it.
But a quarterback sneak, though, you don't think that's odd to, like –
No, like
hit
you kind of lose
private parts
you morph into something different when you cross those lines. You know, it's just a different mindset that you have to tap into. I never did that. I never participated, you know, in the bottom of scrums, punching people, twisting and pulling and doing all of that stuff. But I've seen it. I've heard it. You know what I'm saying? It happens.
Well, listen, linebacker C.J. Mosley and Garner got their lick back later on.
Lick back?
On.
Yeah, come on. You can't say that.
Wait, sorry. Oh, dang it. They got revenge. They got their revenge. Sorry, I didn't – the correlation, yeah, that was wild. Sorry.
Pause yourself.
They got their revenge on Mac Jones later in the game. Look at this.
Oh, what happened? Ooh, jeez, golly! Oh, whoa!
He was body slammed and then pushed again by Gardner. But listen, on the other side of the ball, a storm wasn't just brewing in MetLife Stadium. It was happening on the sidelines because during the fourth quarter of the Jets' loss, 10-15 loss rather, running back Michael Carter was seen screaming at his position coach while Garrett Wilson, wide receiver, was screaming at quarterback Zach Wilson. Look at this.
Takes his time, he gets all the way, and here it comes. This is the frustrations of the NFL right now. This will happen on... It's Michael Carter, the third string running back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we didn't see the video of Garrett Wilson screaming at Zach Wilson, but that was also happening on the sideline at the same time. Zach Wilson went for just 157 yards with zero touchdowns versus New England. I mean, Brandon, we've had the conversation about Zach Wilson on this show. I said he is not a franchise quarterback. Right. He's not the guy. I mean, how much more do the Jets need to see before they bring in somebody else? The season's on the line here.
Yeah, this is unfortunate, right? Like, you know, I love stories, and everybody about it by now knows that I love, you know, the comeback story, right? The underdog story. And the way it's looking is Zach Wilson probably is not going to have the football for long, right? And there's a lot of people talking about Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, didn't really retire. He's in a booth. Mm-hmm. He's calling games. But when he was asked before the season when he took this gig, he's like, listen, I'm still here. I'm open to whatever, right? So there's that person who's out there. Jameis Winston was a guy that was, you know, being thrown around a week ago. But then they go out there. He loses a 17-point lead this Sunday. You know, I think it's time for Woody Johnson and the Jets to potentially look at other opportunities, right? Because Zach, it's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. It's only going to get worse. And I'm not blaming all of this on Zach, but what I do know is that this team is deflated right now. They came in with high hopes. We're talking about Super Bowl aspirations. They lose Aaron Rodgers after four plays, and now they're sitting here trying to figure out how to put back, you know, a championship team. And with Zach Lee in a way right now, it's unfortunate, but it doesn't seem like it's working.
I mean, it's interesting. Let's look forward, though, real quick. I mean, Zach Wilson, he loses his starting job. If he loses the starting job, which is looking like is a possibility, is probably probable.
That's right.
His future in the NFL is what? I mean, how many times do you have to see him at a starting position to realize that he may not be a starting quarterback?
See, this is a terrible place for Zach to be in because I think it's okay now to say that the Jets probably drafted him too high, right? And so bringing in Aaron Rodgers and for Zach to sit behind him for a year or two was the best thing that could have happened for his career, right? And I was looking forward to that because I wanted to see after a year or 2 years, what type of Zach would we get or the NFL get? He could have possibly been traded or somebody else could have, you know, he could move on to another team. So I hate that he's in this position, because what he's shown is that he's not ready. And I said this in the Monday after the Monday night game, Ashley. Remember, I said what I didn't like was his body language, right? Remember, he was still like a deer in the headlights.
His body language looked pretty much the same in this game.
Correct. And you can't have that. You can't be uptight. You got to cut it loose, and you got to be confident. You got to be able to go. You got to win and lose with just like playing your brand the ball. And he's under, like, the moment is too big for him. The moment's too big for him. And I hate that for him. I hate that for him. But it is what it is. We've seen a lot of situations like this.
We're going to see what happens with the Jets and Zach Wilson. Obviously, all eyes will be on this situation. This is obviously as well not the way that this season was supposed to go for the New York Jets. It's just been one failure after another. It's just brutal. Some say that the curse is alive and well.
Oh, my goodness.
But listen, from one quarterback to another, the Browns may be smarter than we actually think, because the Browns potentially could have a loophole to get out of Deshaun Watson's contract. Now, Pro Football Talk obtained a copy of Watson's contract, and it voids all future guarantees for any suspension imposed by the NFL. Now, the guarantees do not void if, quote, player is suspended for not more than one game for violations of the official NFL playing rules, or player is suspended for violations of the official NFL playing rules that, in club sole opinion, results from non-egregious conduct. So basically, if Watson is suspended and the Browns decide that the conduct is egregious, then the team could invalidate his guarantees and potentially get out of his contract. Now, this is a big deal because Watson did escape a suspension for shoving an official in the Browns game against the Steelers. Brandon, hearing this, this is an interesting loophole, especially because he was on the verge of getting suspended for shoving a ref. What do you make of this?
All right, before I give my point, can we fight fair?
Sure.
Okay, because it was like me and Nick Wright when we was on our five-day-a-week show, FS1. Whenever we talked about quarterbacks, that's when it got really spicy. And I'm starting to feel when we talk about quarterbacks, it could potentially get spicy, because you may not like what I'm about to say, Ashley. Here, like, I always think about themes when we break down topics. To me, it's win, baby, win, right?
Okay.
Al Davis, owner of the Raiders, legendary owner of the Raiders, rest in peace. Win, baby, win. Winning cures all. So all of this stuff I can care less about. If he goes out there and he continues to win, then he's not going to have to worry about this.
He did have a good game yesterday.
He had a decent game. I think there's still going to be a couple of weeks where they have to adjust. And this is why I said, like, you know, don't get mad at me, because what I'm looking at is a guy that went from a spread offense to a Kevin Stefanski offense, which is run first, built around Chubb. Right. Right?
And Chubb's now injured.
And now they have to adjust.
Right.
So I see this as a 2 to 3 week adjusting period, right? And I think we'll see exactly who this version of Deshaun Watson is, because he took off 2 years.
Do you think the loophole, though, in the contract is interesting?
I do find it interesting, but again,
I personally can't name I don't think that quarterback contracts have been out in the media like that, in the stratosphere, to really dissect, but I personally have never heard of a loophole like this in an NFL quarterback's contract.
Obviously, you got to think about a deal, right? Like, everybody sat down and said, okay, this is risky for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to catch a lot of flack for this, a lot of pushback, because they guaranteed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did the Cleveland Browns protect themselves? Now we're seeing how they protected themselves, right? Because you don't know what can happen with the player. He can continue to do this. This could be something that he could never kick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to get that at me in there, you feel me? So they're protecting themselves. I get it. I understand. They're not just going to go out there and be that desperate and say, we're giving you a fully guaranteed contract and we're not going to put any language in there that gives us no type of protection.
Right. All right. Well, we will go ahead and... All right, guys, gather around, kids, gather around. Get your friends, get your family, get your family's family. All right, can we get this TV back on if possible as well? Go ahead, gather around.
What's going on? What's wrong?
The moment you have all been waiting for has arrived. Go ahead, everybody. Circle around your TV. Circle around your laptop, your phone. Get your friends. Get your coworkers. Okay, we have arrived. All right? I know you guys have been waiting all show for this, so here we go. All right? The star doesn't shine too bright in the red zone, apparently. All right? The Cowboys headed to the Valley to face the Cardinals yesterday, and in what should have been a win in the column against one of the worst teams in the NFL, turned into a disaster. Dallas would take 5 trips to the red zone and walk away with just 6 points. QB1 Dak Prescott's first interception of the season would be both a red zone and an end zone pick, ultimately securing the team's fate. Now, Arizona led by 12 with 3 minutes left, and won 28-16. Prescott went 25 for 40 for 249 yards, and he spoke to the media after the game, and he said, quote, "Y'all put us on top of the world. We knew who we are." In that same sense, I'm sure the media got exactly what it wanted. Brandon?
Well, first, I want to check in on you. You good?
I'm not, but go ahead.
You sure?
I'm not. Go ahead.
All right. I'm not surprised. For the past 2 weeks, I've been saying, like, man, you know, the Cardinals, they're playing some good ball. Like, think about how they have stood up over the last 3 weeks, playing really good ball. They've been in it. They've been scrappy. And so I'm not surprised by this. What we just witnessed is the Dallas Cowboys' weakness exposed. And I try to say this after the first week. It's what they like and where they're going to thrive is when they play with a lead. When they play with a lead, now you have this amazing defense, that front seven that can get after the quarterback. When you have that type of front seven, more of a finesse type of front seven, like they want to pass rush. What don't they like to do? They don't like to get tough and really strapped down when it comes to the run. So their weakness was exposed, and their weakness is the run game. They average 7.4 yards a carry. 30 attempts, 222 yards. So when you have the lead and you can run the ball against a defense like that, this is the type of game that you can see. And obviously we were all waiting for the Dallas Cowboys offense and Dak Prescott to put together some heroics, but they could never put it all together. And that was unfortunate because I wanted to see them play from behind and see Dak Prescott go into that clutch moment. We didn't see that happen. But again, I'm telling you, this team is really good when they have the lead and when they're playing from behind and the team can run the ball, they're going to be in trouble.
Listen, I sat on this very show, gassed up my Dallas Cowboys after 2 dominant games. Even went ahead and said that the offense is not as bad as people think it is. And you guys made me look stupid. So here's my issue. I have absolutely no excuses for this game. The team came out looking lethargic from the beginning. And I hear what you're saying about how, you know, this team plays better when they're not playing from behind. Well, guess what? This is football. You're not always going to have the lead. You're not always going to start with the lead. You're going to be in a situation where you have to come back from a deficit. And the fact of the matter is that this game was over a lot longer than it was over. And even when Dak Prescott got them downfield, and this was the moment, Dak, this was your moment after last season, after you're gonna go ahead and give us less interceptions this season, this was your moment to go ahead and prove to everybody who does not rock with the star that you are not the quarterback that they say that you are. And what did you give me? You gave me a red zone and an end zone pick. This is not okay. This is a problem. And I know what Micah Parsons said about we can't play down to, you know, teams less than us or whatever the terminology was that he would use. Well, guess what? You took an L to one. It's not about playing down to them. It's about being able to play against whatever competition that you have. Not every game is going to be a blowout, a 42 dub. Not every game is going to be the New York Jets. The fact of the matter is that this is the type of game, this is the type of performance that when people say the Dallas Cowboys are who we thought they were, or they're an accident waiting to happen, this is the type of performance they're referring to. And it pisses me off because this should have been, and again, the Cardinals, we saw it in the game last night, There are things that they do well. I thought Josh Dobbs looked a lot more impressive than I think people will give him credit for. But let's be honest, the Cowboys should have won this game.
This is
when you look at it from hindsight, before the game was even played, and you look at Cowboys versus Cardinals, nobody in their right mind thought that the Cardinals were going to win this game.
I think it's, yes, you're right. Right?
Surface level,
but also just like a lot of logic as well.
Basically, right? Yes.
But Ashley, I keep saying this, and I am wrong. I said this. I opened up the season and said we're not going to make any major announcements. We're not going to make any type of crazy predictions over the first 3 to 4 weeks. And what did I do in week two? I said, oh my goodness, the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Like, this is the year where they actually go the opposite direction, and Mike Tomlin won't be celebrated for just being average and mediocre. And look what he's done since those comments, right? So I say that because who would have thought that the Cincinnati Bengals would be sitting here struggling the way they are and dealing with Joe Burrow's calf injury? And the same thing with the Cardinals. We started this season debating if the Cardinals was entering tank mode, right? Because they cut their second string quarterback, the guy who's the clear favorite. They go bring this kid in who has no track record of winning. He doesn't have no experience. And look what they're doing, right? So I'm not surprised that
losing to a team that's supposed to be tanking.
But see, that's what we thought.
No. But I'm just in hindsight.
You got to think about Josh Dobbs. And this is why I get frustrated
again,
with guys like Zach Wilson.
People, yes.
You know, where it's like you have these opportunities because, like, man, when you have them, you got to take advantage of them because you don't know how many more you're going to get. Josh Dobbs has this opportunity. Let's say everybody else in the Cardinals organization wants to tank. But this guy's thinking about it like, yo, I might not ever get an opportunity to be a starting quarterback again, so I need to go out there and put my best foot forward. And look how he's playing. But it's not just Josh Dobbs. Like, Josh Dobbs, I mean, he completed like 17, 18 passes, 100 and something yards. It wasn't like that's what won the game. What won the game is they played really savvy and scrappy on defense, and they were able to run the ball. 7.4 yards. And again, this is the Dallas Cowboys kryptonite right here. If you can run the ball against this team.
It's so not
you
got to ask these. The ball, though, I mean, to take 5 trips to the red zone and walk away with 6 points, you are unable to convert into touchdowns.
Yeah.
And that's worrisome. You're able to drive down the field. You're able to do what you need to do to get to the red zone, and then you forget how to play football. You take 5 trips and you walk away with 6 points?
I'm glad you highlighted that. The game gets extremely difficult in the red zone, especially the tight red. It turns into who is going to be more patient, right? Because the defense, what they can do is they can have a million people in coverage. That's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you watched the Denver Broncos game yesterday, the opportunities that Russell had in the first half, and this is why I was excited about their offense in the first quarter and a half, was he was getting out the pocket in a tight red zone, and they were going into scramble mode. And then he was finding the guys, right? Like, a lot of times, and Coach McDaniels, I talk highly of him when it comes to the football IQ. He used to teach us this. It's never the first route. So we get going in a tight red, and then you got to be ready to break your route off and get open, right? That's when the play really starts.
Right.
And so I think that's what we're seeing as well with the Dallas Cowboys. So I said the defense, and now you highlighted red zone offense. So this is what they have to lean into. Because this was happening in the first 4 weeks. It's defining who we are. Who are we? Well, we don't want to stop the run. Can we do it? Yes. But they want to go get sacks. They don't want to put their pads in somebody's shoulder and their thigh board to take them down the run game.
It was also, though, just so specifically in the red zone, and I get it, and I get it. It shrinks down there. The amount of plays you can run shrinks down there. The playbook's not as vast.
It's
I hear
sledding.
That. But it's just the lack of creativity in the play calling in general across the board, especially when you start getting closer. I'm not even talking about the red zone specifically. As you start moving the chains and you get closer, the creativity starts getting less and less. And not being able to run the ball in the end zone. Let's go ahead and ignore the passing and all that. I hear it, whatever. Not being able to run the ball in the red zone, which has been the Dallas Cowboys' identity for as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, going back to Ezekiel Elliott in his prime. Mm-hmm. Not being able to do that is a problem.
Yeah.
It is highly worrisome. Because, yes, Dak's not going to be able to get passes off like that down there. I get that. But running the ball has always been a part of this team's identity. Just being able to bulldoze their way into that end zone by any means necessary. And Arizona was able to stop every single thing that was thrown their direction. And that is a problem.
Yeah, but what I would say, I still feel really good about the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, this is your team. So do you pick them every year to be contenders in this? In the Super Bowl?
Not out loud, but in my head.
Okay, because this is the first year that I think this is the second year that I picked the Dallas Cowboys to represent the NFC in the big game. But I still feel really good about the Dallas Cowboys, and it's like no overreactions, and I got to remind myself this, no overreactions in the first 3 to 4 weeks, because really good teams and championship teams, what they're doing right now is they're collecting information. It's like, okay, every year is different. Who are we? Who aren't we? What do we need to learn? What's our tails? Let's fix these things, because really, football season starts, right? And I learned this from Julian Edelman, like this is the language that they use in New England. Football season starts post-Thanksgiving. Who are we then, right? Who are we then? Obviously, you want to win these games. They're supposed to win these games, but you know, like they still have a lot of time. This was my last tweet yesterday. You know, you got me into tweeting. I said, great test for the Dallas Cowboys. This was probably the second quarter. Mm-hmm. I tweeted this, or X'd it, whatever you call it. Champions don't panic and find a way to come back. Are they champions? ? So what they showed us right now is that they're not there yet. Mm-hmm. Because that's the game where you're supposed to get scrappy and find your way back into the game. But I've been here before where you travel to game places like Buffalo or Cleveland or even Arizona. It's like there's just like this gray over it. And it's like that energy, because what you said, they didn't start with that type of energy and that desire. Like, let's go run through them. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, we will see. Will this matter in the grand scheme of the season? We definitely hope not. But as always, all eyes will be on the star. Now, before we close out the show, we have another doubleheader for Monday Night Football. First up, the Los Angeles Rams will visit the Cincinnati Bengals, a rematch of the 2022 Super Bowl. Now, the Bengals right now are 2-point favorites.
Ooh.
Yeah, the over-under is 44 points. The money line, Rams +120, Bengals -140. Now, the Rams are 2-0 against the spread so far this season, and the Bengals have not had a losing record since 2020. Now, this is going to be an interesting aspect of this game, because per Jonathan Jones, the Bengals could place quarterback Joe Burrow on short-term IR. The team signed A.J. McCarron on Saturday. So, Brandon, all that information.
Right.
What do you make of this game?
I mean, it's the same conversation that we just finished, right? No overreactions. Going into this year, you know, we would have thought that the Cincinnati Bengals would probably be favored by more. You know, they're at home, right? And you know, we thought that the Los Angeles Rams would be in a situation mm-hmm. where they're rebuilding.
I did.
And now, like, for me, I'm actually I don't know Vegas like that, but my mind, the Rams are the favorite. Not the Cincinnati Bengals. I like what they're doing on offense as far as like the Rams. I like where Matthew Stafford is. I like where Aaron Donald is. And like, just like I said, and I think I didn't talk about this last week, but Aaron Donald himself can disrupt everything that the Cincinnati Bengals have going on, because they're struggling. They're struggling up front. They're struggling on offense. So that man right there has the ability to get to the quarterback and just wreak havoc. Play after play after play. So to me, this is a pick 'em game for me. Pick 'em basically means like.
No, I know, but I want to ask you specifically with the news about Joe Burrow possibly being placed on IR. A.J. McCarron, obviously from Bama. I mean, what is this? Not just this game, but looking forward to the Bengals season. Short term IR is what, 4 to 5 games?
Yeah. Yep.
So what is that? What does that turn this Bengals season into for the next 4 to 5 games?
They have no chance.
Wow.
They have no chance. I love their offensive weapons. I can't say that. You know, they may win a game or two. I don't even know their schedule, but maybe pull up their schedule and let's walk through it. But this is a big deal. Joe Burrow is that type of guy where he makes everyone better. Think about it.
All right, so here we go. We obviously we're speaking about the Rams right now. Next, on the 1st of October, they play the Titans.
I like the Titans.
Okay, then on the 8th, they play the Cardinals.
You saw what we were seeing. The Cardinals been playing really tough the last 3 weeks, but that's a game that potentially they can get.
On the 15th, they play the Seahawks.
Where at?
In Cincinnati.
Okay. I like Seattle. Sometimes, like, this new Seattle team, I don't know how they travel. Like, the Pete Carroll and the Russell Wilsons, the East Coast, West Coast, up north, down south, them boys is playing regardless. And that's a big commute, you know, from west to east. I like Seattle.
All right, and then last, if it's in that 4-5 game range, would be at the 49ers.
They might as well go to sleep. 40, you kidding me? I got the Miami Dolphins and the 49ers, like, right now is like the teams to beat, AFC, NFC.
All right, man. Well, we're going to move on. We got one other team on the lineup for Monday Night Football, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So hold on. That's where I'm going to make my money. Before you go there, I'm taking the Rams.
Okay.
I'm taking the Rams, with or without Joe Burrow. I'm taking the Rams.
All right.
So I just want to be clear there.
So and Brandon some money is taking the Rams.
Yes.
Okay, so that's your pick. All right, here we go. We got one more for you. The Philadelphia Eagles will take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Tampa Bay. Right now, the Eagles are the 5-point favorites in the latest odds, and the over-under is 45 points. Money line, Eagles minus 224, and the Bucs plus 185. The Eagles are 3-6 against the spread in their last 9 regular season road games, and the Bucs are 2-0 against the spread this year after going 4-12-1 last season. Brandon, what do you make of this one? The Bucs are playing a lot better than people.
Again, no overreactions in the first couple weeks. Who would have thought? Like, we were making fun of Baker Mayfield. We were making fun of the Tampa Bay Bucs. And now the Tampa Bay Bucs, what are they, 2-0? They're 2-0. Yes, they're 2-0.
They're looking a little.
This is the type of game, if you're the Bucs, that you're excited about. Because now you can see exactly where you're at early, right? Philadelphia Eagles, they're struggling a little bit. I wouldn't say they're struggling, but they're not the same team from last year. Mm-hmm. They're presenting some chink in the armor. Like, you're seeing it. So if you're the Tampa Bay Bucs, right, like, you're licking your chops because, like, if we truly believe that we're, you know, a team that can compete at a high level this year, then we need to go out and show well and win this game. So this is going to be a really close game because they do have defense, right? And then Baker Mayfield, he's playing well. He's playing really well. So
much better than people anticipated.
You want me to pick it?
You got to pick it.
I got to pick it.
Remember, Eagles right now are a five-point favorite.
I'll take the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to cover.
Okay.
Right? To cover. That's a smart bet. Like, but I'm the type of dude that will go out there and put all my money on just Tampa Bay winning.
All right. Well, listen, the over-under is 45 points. So what's your score prediction?
Man, 45. I'm going to go over. It's a lot of teams scoring a lot of points.
Okay.
These first couple of weeks of the season. 70? 70?
41?
You know people get fired after games like that.
That's why they do.
Because there was so much. We had everybody saying, y'all gotta move on from that conversation. But actually, they kept Russell Wilson in because when you in games like that, you're sitting on the sideline as a player, like, yo, who's gonna get fired after this one? You really think about that. It obviously is too early. It's only week 3, but where's this going to go? If we look up and they're 0-6, 0-7, what do you do if you're the owner? You're the Walmart family.
You got to pink slip everybody.
You firing everybody?
Except Russell Wilson and Sean Payton. Everyone got to go at this point.
So you can't.
No, not like the players, but I'm saying, like, if your name's not Sean Payton, I'm just using that to be facetious. But Sean Payton, Russell Wilson, y'all save. Everybody else, y'all see me in my office.
Could Coach Payton panic and say, all right, let me make a move at the quarterback position?
I don't think he'll make a move at the quarterback position, but it is going to be interesting when we go ahead and look back on this season or midway through the season to see where the Bucs are, if we can go ahead and have that
conversation. I'm taking the Bucs tonight. Come on, I ain't getting scared. I'm prime time. I keep telling y'all, y'all heard what I said when I opened this. Boy, y'all better watch prime and see how he walking in his purpose, okay? This man is fully aligned with God. And I'm being confident. I ain't going to sit here and be scared. I'm not going to sit back and say, you know what? I'm just going to cut the spread. Tampa Bay to cover the spread. Hell no. I'm going with Tampa Bay to win. Bet it.
All right, guys. Well, on that note, if you want to follow Brandon or you want to go ahead and play.
Baker, I'm sorry, Baker. I was disrespectful. Baker playing like that. Pay the man, Mike. Mike, why they not paying him?
Guys, this has been Paper Out. If you're listening on Sirius XM, thank you so much. Faction Talk 103. And we will be back tomorrow, and we'll see if any of Brandon's bets actually cash.
Ooh! Bye. And if it don't, we'll be sitting up there like Coach Prime like this, like, look, y'all better get me now. What'd he say? What Coach Prime say? He said, you better get me now. This is the sorriest we gonna be.